Welcome, everyone, to the Pop Culture Podcast by Fantastic Geek. My name is Matt, and joining me as always is Pete. Hello, Pete.
Hello, Matt. Hello, everybody. Calling you to action for Star Wars Rebels episode 113, Call to Action.
Unless, of course, you're watching on watchdisneyxd.go.com, which calls it episode 11, and Pete and I were momentarily confused. So Call to Action, yet again, the official name of the episode that we're watching. Are you ready, Pete?
11-teen.
11-teen, indeed. 11-zies. I know what a big Tolkien fan you are. Anyhow, Pete, are you ready to press play on your viewing device?
Punch it.
All right, here we go. On go. 3, 2, 1, go.
And instantly, with the Imperial March and the Star Destroyer and the Lambda-class shuttle, I'm drawn in.
This is where the money went. All those times when we were like, look, here we are on the grassy plains of Lothal having exposition. This sizzles, this whole opening sizzles. This is actually the second time I've seen most of this episode today. And this is just, this is an opening that absolutely works, especially with the reveal of Tarkin.
You mean Peter Cushing?
Peter Cushing, indeed. They went back and did motion capture. That's all a lie. But it's a, considering what a distinctive voice Peter Cushing has, this is a pretty good version that they have of him.
You know, the recreation of the beginning of Return of the Jedi here, albeit minus Vader, it works with one exception. It's very hard to look at the Inquisitor, and we have Inquisitors coming in season two, but to look at him and not feel like he's out of place. The Empire was traditionally anti-alien. We never saw any aliens in the Empire in the original three movies, and for some reason this just doesn't sit right, seeing him there amongst the white stormtroopers and TIE fighter pilots and ATDP pilots there.
I hadn't quite thought of it, but I guess I'm inclined to agree, particularly since you know, the Empire is ostensibly this really secular operation without kind of the religious nature of the Jedi and the Republic and all that, and him kind of as a, you know, as a quasi-Jedi or quasi-Sith, rather. You know, I know we've had the discussion, he's not a Sith, but somehow can, you know, force push things and use his lightsaber and all that. But perhaps it's just as simple as you have to keep him in the story, even though you're not using him here.
Right. And, you know, when Tarkin was used sparingly in the Clone Wars, you know, he's one 3-episode arc, and then he's towards the end of the fifth season, expertly used to bring him in there and establish that he had been alongside the Jedi, and gives this all the more weight.
I mean, even in this opening, I feel like my constant concern of recycling, 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 we're somehow seeing things anew. And I don't know if it's things as simple to state as, you know, the lighting that they're doing here, the slight smoke in the air, the way that's capturing the lighting, but this just looks like a bigger, better village set. I know it's not necessarily, you know, capital city, but I got news for you. They're in some corner of the capital city digital set here. And there's just a sizzle to all of this that there was not in earlier episodes.
And all the more momentum as we head towards the end of the first season.
Yeah, I mean, part of the fun of doing this rewatch has been seeing how the show has grown up so quickly. And here we are, these 13 episodes in, and there's just, like, even there, just kind of the narrative, I don't know what I want to say, that the assumption that we can figure out, anybody who's watching, not just the grown-ups but the kiddies, that we can figure out that, you know, there's the two bodies there, so somehow they've been taken out, and the way the third stormtrooper is taken out, that's how the other two were. There's just a certain, I don't know, there's a heft to it. There's a self-reliance.
And Senator Brett Spiner here has turned a triple agent. And now the rebels aren't on the run all the more.
If only the senator had an emotion chip that he could turn off. Which could change size between the TV show and the movie. Anyhow. Even when I was a teenager, Pete, I believed in continuity of things.
But obsessive compulsive disorder.
Well, you know what, Pete?
Listeners, you decide which.
These hands aren't going to wash themselves 20 times a day.
It's a make your own neuroses, listeners.
Pete, I'm glad that we're, and I'm saying this tongue in cheek, because every darned episode of anything that you watch is going to have the explanation scene where they give exposition, you know, but like snap of fingers. Oh, you want to break into the antenna to send a signal.
Right.
Pointing out the function of this scene. That's all.
On a planet of antenna towers. with a protagonist who made a home in an antenna tower.
Now, Pete, I just have a question for you. Is it true that you can tell by Sabine's hair whether this is a reshoot or part of the original shoot?
Well, it's funny that you say that, because you're going to be able to tell season two to season one based on her hair. Her hair is partially green in season two.
I welcome those efforts in what is ostensibly a children's show to mark the passage of time. And well, speaking of a children's show, Pete.
Wait for it. If you're watching this for the first time, we're going to give you a little bit of a spoiler alert. Something bad is about to happen.
If you're watching this for the first time, you shouldn't be watching a commentary track. You should be enjoying it for all its goodness. But this is coming up here. This is the turning of the tide in terms of, oh, this is now, this is a slight, this is like PG-10, if you will, you know, to borrow a phrase we discussed, at least, you know, PG-16 from the Daredevil podcast.
This show grew up in this scene so violently yet powerfully. When I watched this, you and I were texting back and forth, if I remember it correctly. And I was like, yeah, this show just hit its stride.
Yeah. And even little things like I'm watching on Taskmaster Grint, is it? Like, yes. I'm watching his acting, his performance, his animation, whatever you want to call it, in moments where your focus shouldn't be there. And he's well done. He's well performed, well animated. So hats off.
Not even Callus believes this is about to go down.
And, you know, having watched this episode for about, having watched it about four times, you can see Grint's face for a second at either the moment of impact or the moment where he realizes what's going on. Like, there's a slight look in his face. You can't see the other guy's face right, just because he's a bit shorter, but there's a slight moment of, and then it gets worse.
You really have to hope, although the producers have been out in front of it for season two, Vader will not be used nearly as frequently as people are hoping for, and I think that's the right decision. He's got to remain the movie's big bad. When they're going to show him, and we've seen him already in the season two premiere, he's going to be go for broke, not playing around Darth Vader. I just hope we get a little bit of the Tarkin Vader, you know, that than we've gotten in the movies to date.
It certainly would behoove season two, particularly they've got to feel relatively confident, you know, that there's a season three order not too far behind, that maybe this is a show that has four seasons, you know, legs for four seasons, five seasons, something like that. You know, it's like Jaws. You can have Jaws attack in the beginning. or in the beginning of the second season with Siege and Lothal. But you can't have Jaws in every scene. Otherwise, you kind of don't care when Roy Scheider's chumming some of this you-know-what, and then Jaws appears. You need that space in order to earn it.
Right. And, you know, conversely, it'll be the same with Ahsoka. She will not be an every episode foil, particularly with the reveal there at the end of the season two premiere that Vader is aware of her, as is the Emperor. I love the inclusion of the Imperial probe droid here. And, you know, again, Ben Burtt and his sounds, going to be a sad day when somebody else is producing those, because I just don't think they'll be as memorable.
There's an organic nature to a lot of his sounds, which, no surprise, he was doing them in a completely analog era. But there's just, I mean, that, like, it's more than its electronic counterparts. It's got a voice, and that's always the voice of an Imperial probe droid and the Empire and Watch Out and Hide, which is why in one of the Force Awakens
The previews, very first clip we see of a character, you hear it off screen really quick, and you... somebody's being searched for. That's what that is.
Yeah. And I mean, that's the difference between language and sounds. When you can communicate an idea, you know, a complex idea of the Empire is looking for you, you know.
Absolutely. And it's not even the Empire looking for them, Matt. It's or not whatever. Even the Empire.
So, Pete, we had a listener ask, or at least a big fan ask, what exactly do all the rank insignia mean?
Well, the blue mean that guy has a bunch of blue buttons. Likewise, the red and the yellow also mean he has completed red and yellow training.
Excellent, excellent. That's good to know, and that's one to grow on.
And those are pens in special Imperial pocket protectors on both sides of Tarkin's chest there.
Not further rank insignia, they're pens.
They are pens.
Good to know. It's a well-constructed episode. I mean, it also benefits from the idea that it doesn't have to climax at the end of the 22 minutes, because it's spoiler alert to be continued. So, I mean, it's not quite serial and it's not quite a two-parter, although I'd say it's by and large a two-parter, but there's a tautness to it nonetheless, even though it doesn't have to hit a, you know, climax, resolution, and wrap up all in the course of the episode.
You know, and continuing to gnaw at Ezra here, this idea about his parents, about what's gone on with this idealistic politician he thought he was following. And, you know, the subject of doubt is very much part of his character on the show. And I like that, in a way that you couldn't really tease doubt out with Luke Skywalker in a 2-hour movie three times.
It is interesting to think that there's so much in the original trilogy which is great, but is kind of, I mean, it's great on its own, but it's also kind of great by implication. Like opening up Empire Strikes Back, where Commander Skywalker, Commander Solo, and you're saying, oh, wow, time has gone by for them. This isn't just like where we left off last time.
And, you just busted Han a couple ranks there. That would be General Solo.
Ah, well, there you go. Sorry, my bad. But I mean, point being, you're saying, well, when did this all happen? Well, it's part of the grandness of the movies that there's these, you know, stuff is happening in between and all of that. Which is all well and good, but we're kind of, especially in this, you know, golden age, this platinum age of television that we're in, the idea of, you know, there's discussion in the scene where Grint and the the other guy get their heads removed, where it's
commandant.
Like the commandant, where it's like, oh, you mean there's more than one cell? And we're sitting going, hey, we're you know, like, yeah, we've known all along that we're going to go from these people, and at some point, whether it's in this, the course of this as a multi-season series or whenever, this turns into full rebellion and a successful rebellion. But there's this slower pace to it that we're given in the show.
I have a new hope that they will find other cells and everything will work out before the Empire strikes back.
I don't really understand what you're saying at all. So
there'll be a Return of the Jedi as well.
But wouldn't that require the Force Awakenings?
Force Awakenings?
Absolutely. I just speak the good English. I learned from Owato.
What are you trying to say there, huh, Matthew? You talk about me? And no one else has a T-14 hyperdrive motivator. I promise you that.
He's so metaphorical for something.
I love this little spike, they call it here. Kind of a reference to some cyber stuff done in the now not counting novels.
Indeed. It would be something if in the course of figuring out what they're doing with the, you know, the betwixt the original prequel sequel stuff and the spin-off stuff, if they recanonize some of the novels, Zahn trilogy just continues to hold up. Really in movie form. I mean, it's fantastic.
There was a guy, we talked about this off air. There was a guy who actually, as a film project, scripted Heir to the Empire, and it was 180 pages, and of course, unfilmable. You know, they give 3 hours to, you know, one of those in between novels. But it's an interesting thing to check out, just from, you know, a curiosity standpoint. Matt, we have the D23 Disney conference in California this coming weekend, and you know, it's a bit of a bummer. They're already out in front of it. No new Star Wars footage, no behind the scenes footage, no trailer.
No bummer there, because when they announce plans for Star Wars Land and Marvelville or whatever at the parks, people are going to create a waste disposal unit in their drawers and just go, oh my goodness, so when will the Mos Eisley Cantina, you know, dining package and stunt show in the restaurant, when is that going to happen? Because I want to get that reservation ASAP.
As long as Han shoots first, I'll still pay my bill.
Unfortunately, a lot of the theme park stuff is probably 3 to 5 years away from announcements, but I hold out hope. Oh, man. Who's the someone, Pete? It would be a slightly... I know Vader was reinserted into the...
pilot,
you know, into the pilot and kind of into the story a little bit after the fact. You would think Vader, I mean, the implication, I guess, is indeed Vader, but just it's not quite as tight as it could be. I guess we know it, so those
their little craft there don't work for me, in that the design just looks kind of silly.
The like the troop carrier ones?
Yeah, no, not the Imperial troop transport that we've established. That's nothing but homage and love there. The right. The little flying gunship helicopter style ones, they feel too hybrided between, you know, the Republic gunships and TIE fighters.
Right. The sadness on Hera's face there.
Oh, man, it's a cliffhanger, Matt. What are they left Kanan.
I would argue too, given some of the more juvenile aspects to the earlier episodes, the chutzpah to end with not just a cliffhanger, but like for all. I mean, look, we obviously can know even on first viewing he's going to be okay, but just to kind of punch you in the gut in that way is incredibly effective. And like we've mentioned before in this episode, it's the beginning of the maturation of this series.
And, you know, while these characters do not show up in the movies, and there's a lot of speculation that some of them may, and it is a children's show, they've now thrown down the gauntlet. You know, these people don't have to necessarily survive.
Yeah, yeah. And as you've noted before about Clone Wars, there were 8-year-olds who started watching it who, you know, would have been 13 or 14 when it was over. So do you make that decision that Rebels episode, Rebels season 5 becomes, now we're going to make it, you know, we're going to take a pound of flesh and punch you in the gut and that's it. And if there's some children crying, oh, well, we just did the last episode anyway. It certainly is possible.
A pound of Freddie Prinze Jr., perhaps?
Oh, man. Say it ain't so.
Oh, man. They're shooting one of the 15 million antennas on this planet down.
Wait. Pete, one big circle, two little circles.
Yeah.
Is that a little nod to old Walt there?
Well, to his mouse, at least. As I tweeted and Star Wars Twitter account favorited, the liver spots on digital Tarkin are astounding.
So is that notion, you know, you don't know what it takes to win a war, that, again, the show is kind of self-consciously saying, yeah, you know where this ends up. You know that this ends up with the Empire being defeated, but we're not giving that to you easily. We're going to continue to put these characters in like almost kind of minimalize their efforts.
Love the weight of the clothes there too, you know, going no minimal sound.
Well, Pete, you know what else has weight is all those people who interact with you on Twitter and the joy that they have every time. How can more people do so?
You can find me on Twitter at Peter, PieterJKetelaar, KetelaaR, 6,110 followers. Can't be wrong.
And while I am personally on Twitter as Looking Back Lost, you can be in touch with the podcast in a variety of ways. We are Fantastic Geek. That's fantastic with a PH. You can find us on the .com, the Twitter, and the Gmail. But wait, Pete, there's more.
There is Facebook.com/ Fantastic Geek. Again, with a PH, all one word. Like us. You won't regret it today.
Indeed. Well, Pete, looking ahead to D23 news, looking ahead to more Star Wars Rebels next week. But for this week, I will give you the final word.
Step into my office.